You're listening to Tech Talk Radio in your backyard and worldwide on the pod.
Every once in a while, a revolutionary product comes along that changes everything.
It's the first time that Apple have actually decided to tell people about something that they're developing.
High-speed broadband. Let's just make sure that we can get it in Australia this year, not next.
The three main spamming countries are the United States, China, and South Korea.
And I've got some residual powers.
Sounds like something out of Harry Potter.
Senator Coonan, the voice of reason.
There's a couple of systems on a gantry that's actually based on a military missile tracking system.
You put the date on ePray, and you get a whole service just on it.
How does it go?
IE7, you were having trouble installing it because you had a genuine copy of Windows that wouldn't validate properly. What did you have to do to get past that?
Built a new machine.
But how hard can it be?
No, it's not hard at all.
At the end of the day, the photography is all about the person's eye and what they see.
If you find something that's inappropriate about your child, you need to do something about it because it will not go away.
On air, on the internet, and on the pod, you're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Tech Talk Radio. I'm your host, Andrew McComb. This week, we're about to witness the next internet revolution, as domain names as we know them are about to become simpler, but probably more confusing. A plan to allow users to register generic domain names has been approved by the Internet Corporation for Assigned Names and Numbers, otherwise known as ICANN. The plan will allow users to register whatever domain suffix they want for their site, rather than being limited to the traditional .com or .net labels. So instead of Microsoft.com or Apple.com, the internet name can now be .apple or .microsoft. Users will also be allowed to register domains with non-Latin characters, thus paving the way for international sites which use Chinese, Russian, or other unique characters. The group has not yet decided on what registration of the new domains will cost, though the prices are expected to be significantly higher than existing suffixes. The approval came at the conclusion of ICANN's international public meeting in France. Other measures passed in the meeting include new measures designed to eliminate large-scale domain tasting, in which multiple domains are registered and unprofitable addresses are quickly dumped.
This week on Tech Talk Radio.
Telstra launches cell phone scannable barcodes. Should fibre to the node kill the current copper network? 3 Mobile enlists online help to secure the iPhone, and we hear from a rural listener about the state of broadband in the bush and his current broadband woes. First up, though, here's the latest happenings from the Tech Talk News Desk with Dr. Ron.
This is Tech Talk News.
This week on Tech Talk News, ICANN opens the floodgates. New top-level domains are on the way. Bill Gates retires from Microsoft at age 52. Hutchison's 3 enlists subscriber help to catch Apple's new iPhone. Local television debuts on Aussie iTunes. And Chrysler turns motor vehicles into mobile Wi-Fi hotspots. Welcome to Tech Talk News. ICANN, the Internet Corporation for Assigned Names and Numbers, last week approved the introduction of new top-level internet domain names, making the first sweeping changes in the internet's 25-year-old address system. ICANN, which controls the allocation of internet domain names, unanimously approved the new guidelines at the conclusion of meetings in Paris on Thursday. ICANN also voted unanimously to open public comment on a separate proposal to permit addresses comprised entirely of non-English languages for the first time. While the new names won't start appearing until at least next year, the new suffixes are expected to include locations such as .sydney or .melbourne, company names such as .disney or .microsoft, and even generic industry names such as .bank. ICANN is yet to work out many of the details, including fees for obtaining new names, which are expected to exceed $100,000 apiece to help ICANN recoup up to $20 million in costs. ICANN said it would seek public comment on the guidelines before its next major meeting in November. The co-founder of Microsoft, the world's largest software company, retired on Friday last week. Bill Gates will still be Microsoft's chairman and largest shareholder, but Friday was his last day as a full-time worker. The Harvard University dropout was the wealthiest person on the planet for many years, worth more than $100 billion in 1999. His fortune is now about half that because of the declining value of Microsoft shares and Gates's continued donations to the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, which is focused on global health, vaccinations and education. Gates's chief research and strategy officer duties will be overseen by Craig Mundy. Steve Ballmer, Gates's former Harvard classmate, will continue as Microsoft CEO. Feeling the pressure of iPhone hype more than anyone at the moment, Hutchison's 3 Network is pleading for its customers to help it to land Apple's latest must-have gadget. After Telstra's belated announcements that it would be carrying Apple's 3G iPhone, in addition to network rivals Optus and Vodafone, Hutchison's 3 is now looking like the odd one out. The director of sales at 3, Mr. Noel Hamill, told The Age Tech last week that since Apple had announced the impending launch of the iPhone, 3 had been inundated with inquiries from customers wishing to buy the device. Apple's decision to exclude 3 from its local carrier partners is also curious given it has partnered with parent Hutchison to launch the device in Hong Kong. Mr. Hamill said that a new website, 3.com.au/iPhone, would soon go live, and 3 customers were encouraged to register their interest for the powers that be at Apple to see. Australian users of Apple's iTunes can now buy television shows for the first time. Priced at $2.99 each, an agreement has been reached with local networks and studios for rights to distribute episodes via Apple's iTunes. Local shows available include Summer Heights High, McLeod's Daughters, Canal Road, and Sea Patrol. US favourites are also available, including Lost, Grey's Anatomy, The Hills, South Park, Pimp My Ride, and Scrubs. Single episodes cost $2.99, but no discounts are available for buying full seasons, unlike overseas. The Age Tech also noted that TV shows had been available through iTunes in the United States since 2005, and that individual episodes cost only $1.99 US. The Ten Network said it was still working with Apple to bring its shows to iTunes. And the family road trip may never be the same again, with United States car manufacturer Chrysler last week announcing it would turn select model vehicles into mobile Wi-Fi hotspots from 2009. Using either Wi-Fi or Bluetooth connectivity, passengers in select Chrysler, Dodge and Jeep vehicles will be able to link to an onboard 30GB hard drive and also connect to the internet using an inbuilt mobile phone modem, which Chrysler calls Uconnect technology. Owners of Apple iPods will also be able to use the car's Wi-Fi service to access and control their portable music players through the car's stereo and steering wheel controls. I'm Dr. Ron, and that's your tech update for this week.
Previously on Tech Talk Radio.
Firefox 3, who has?
Yes, yay. I did.
Yes, everyone. Absolutely. Yeah. What do you think of the browser, boys?
So far, I like it.
I like it.
It's faster, isn't it?
But interesting, interesting stuff. Good technology.
Foxtel debut HD in their little arrangements just recently.
Seen the definition looks like it's been sent through RealPlayer or something.
This is actually a thought-out PR plan. And this is another bugbear with me. PR agencies are getting it so wrong.
Something like a woman scorned.
NAB, web junk.
We tend to use that terminology sloppily, and it can confuse non-technical people as well as technical people.
Well, your Blu-ray will do 1080p.
And if your screen will do it.
That's a good idea. So it just writes straight to the USB port, isn't
exactly
it?
Right.
Where you're going to get your iPhone from. You're going to get a Vodafone one or a Telstra one.
No, I'll do it again later.
That old chestnut.
Time Warner, can you live with yourself if a customer is forced to pay an extra dollar to download a movie?
It's a tricky thing, the English language. One little letter and...
It is. Yeah. One comma in the wrong spot and it can just change the course of history.
Yeah. Entertaining, informative and independent. You're listening to Tech Talk Radio. The panel on Tech Talk Radio.
Welcome to Tech Talk Radio for yet another week. Hello, wherever you might be listening to us around this great big country or on the other side of the world, as we've been getting lots of emails from people in far-flung places. Welcome to you all. Absolutely fabulous. We have a full panel this evening. Dr. Ron is here, as per normal, before you jet off over to the other side of the planet. You can listen to us from afar.
I'll be able to. I hope my someone turns my stream on for me. That's the...
Why don't you just leave it on like everybody,
well,
could, everybody else
I?
Does?
Just yeah. Let it run.
It's a good telltale sign, and you can always check in from home. It's like, oh, the stream's down. Quick, reboot.
I have to bring one of you to come round and flick the switch on and off at the power.
No, come on. It's Linux. You boast about the fact that it never falls over.
True. That's very true. It's a challenge. Sounds
absolutely.
Like a challenge.
The server may never fall over, but the power supply to it, the mains, is a different issue.
Well, yes. Yes, the electricity companies have got a lot to be desired for these days, isn't it?
Right.
Anyway, that was the voice of Graham Callaghan, ladies and gentlemen.
You didn't.
You just jumped the gun, but that's all right. We're also, this evening, have, would you believe, someone who wants to be on our show, which is fantastic. Lucy Butler, a self-confessed Luddite, joins us on the panel this evening, and she's going to tell us all about, I don't know, anything. We're going to talk technology with her. She can jump in. We get the voice from the youth of today, Generation Y.
Hey, Lucy, how you doing?
I'm good, thank you.
Thank you for stopping by this evening and joining our little on the couch here in the panel. We'll pass the coffees around very shortly and do all that sort of stuff. But what a week it's been in technology, boys and girl, lady. It's been fantastic, hasn't it?
Very busy. Very, 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 very busy. We've been inundated with email during the week.
We have, and I've got a desk full of it here at the moment, but I'm just trying to sift my way through the first thing to talk about. Here's a something which absolutely tickled my fancy during the course of the week. What has Shane... This is not a joke. This is a joke.
No.
Just pause this. This is called an ongoing teaser.
Okay.
What has Shane Warne and Sol Trujillo got in common? They're both
plays cricket. One,
that's, yes,
yeah. One,
they're both really good spinners.
Oh yeah, yeah.
And someone's spin actually benefits Australia, and someone's doesn't. But anyway,
which is which?
What do you mean, which is which? Doctor Ron. Dr. Ron.
Gotcha.
Yes, absolutely. Well, believe it or not, there was a survey. We have surveys all around the place.
Yep.
The fourth annual Reader's Digest Trust Survey, believe it or not, they have surveys too. Trust being the key word here. Found that Australians rate Sol Trujillo, the Telstra CEO, amongst the least trustworthy people in the country.
Oh, what about Shane Warne?
Well...
second least trustworthy.
No. He tied with Sol Trujillo.
There you go.
Can you believe it? This was reported on the T4 Tell the Truth Telstra website, which I thought was quite humorous because they like to stick the boots in a little bit. But Sol and Shane have got a lot in common. They're both the fifth least trusted people in the survey. And Mr. Trujillo ranks one place above confessed terrorism supporter David Hicks.
Oh, dear. That's harsh.
Also, Mr. Trujillo and Warney could both claim to making their living as spinners, but at least Shane Warne can take comfort that his flipper has probably given Australians more pleasure over the years than Mr. Trujillo's public utterances, according to a T4 spokesman.
I reckon they should swap jobs for a day.
It's very funny, really, isn't it? We're going to be talking about Telstra later in the evening.
Good.
In fact, a lot of Telstra tonight. If you don't like us talking about Telstra, put a CD on.
it's a bit unusual for us to be talking about Telstra.
Is it? No, not at all. We have, there's iPhone news this evening. There's also people in the bush. I've got a person in the bush. We're going to be speaking to Graham Dingle this evening. He lives in central Victoria, an avid listener to the program.
He's got Telstra issues.
He has, he's reliant on mobile broadband, Next G, and we're going to find out how it's going out there in the bushlands. I think it's working, but I think there's also issues with, just the way that Telstra provide those sort of things, but we'll catch up with him very shortly as well.
He could get an iPhone now when it is made available.
Yes. You going to get one? Telstra announced today. Did you know? I'm looking for the press release.
We'll talk about this later on in the show.
What have you done with my press release? You said it was absolute rubbish.
This one
before.
Here. That one.
That's the one.
The one I scoffed at and blew my nose on. Yeah.
That's...
The carry that I'm with, I think, is the only one that hasn't made the announcement about the iPhone yet.
Likewise.
We're going to talk about it later in the show.
That later too.
Yeah.
Anyway,
yeah.
Let's throw it over to Generation Y. Lucy, stop talking to your father. What do you think about the iPhone? Are you going to get one?
I haven't heard much because I know nothing about technology. But
come on, empty
your
pockets. What have you got? Have you got a little Nokia or Sony Ericsson?
I have a Samsung.
Do you?
Yeah.
What do you use it for?
Texting.
Exactly. See, there's the Gen Y answer, isn't it? See, anyone else in the room would say, phone calls?
Phone calls. No, I get in a lot of trouble from my parents because I never call people. I don't like calling people.
Really?
I'd rather text.
Why is that?
I don't know. I don't know. I've never liked talking on the phone. I'm not a big fan of talking on the phone.
Yeah, you're happy to talk on the radio but not the phone.
Yeah, exactly.
Go figure that one out, ladies
and
gentlemen.
That doesn't make sense, but it works for me.
How many text messages do you send a day, listen?
Oh, I wouldn't have a clue. Too many.
Too many?
Too many.
10?
With my father.
Your dad's in the building. We should get a survey from him in a second, see who pays the phone bill.
If you ask my dad, he'll go on a lecture about how much I spend. just too many.
Hang on, what was that? 20?
That was 20.
20.
Yeah.
20. 20, the hand signals
then
came
held up 20 fingers.
Oh, that's not too bad.
That's all right. 20 a day.
20 is fine.
I probably send 20 a day.
Thank you. Try to tell my dad that. He doesn't understand.
Dr. Ron, do you remember taking it to the streets not so long back?
I do.
And we were talking to some students out front of one of the universities
Melbourne
here in Melbourne.
University.
Yeah, some people have got some real serious problems.
Hundreds a day.
Huge.
Yeah.
Yeah, my friends have serious issues with texting.
And we were talking to them and then their phone would be beeping.
Yeah.
It'd beep three times in the space of us talking to them in a minute.
School is just, people have their phones going off every 2 seconds.
It's crazy stuff.
It's unbelievable.
Yeah. How do you go in schools with texting? Do they take your phone away from you these days? Or do you go to the sin bin? Or what happens?
Well,
detention.
The thing is, people put it on vibrate or silent and you can't tell. So you'll just vibrate against you and you'll realise. And people can hide underneath the desk pretty easily.
Mm.
Yeah, but someone sends a group text to everyone in the classroom and all of a sudden everyone's going, sorry, that's a visual gag for radio. And the teacher's got to know what's going on, surely, as they peer down underneath their desk.
No, group text isn't, there isn't many of them.
Really?
These days, no.
I find that amazing. But then again, I'm not Gen Y.
The teachers would probably be trying to teach the class and they're probably trying to send the same messages as well. They've got their own agenda to worry about. They can just, exactly. I hope that the kids don't realise, I'm trying to set up a hot date for tonight. My phone's beeping and buzzing as I'm trying to teach chemistry or something.
Last week on Tech Talk Radio, we announced that the state government, or it might even been the federal government, are actually looking at putting mobile phone jamming devices into prisons.
That's right.
Yeah. Wonder if they roll it out in schools as well.
Just keep it
there's
going.
There'll be a backlash there, I would imagine.
There'll be a revolt. The students.
A revolt? You're not kidding. Anyway, back to the iPhone, that new gadget thingy that's being relaunched here in Australia on the 11th of July. You going to get one, Doctor Ron? I've asked you before. Have you changed your mind yet?
Well, I'm waiting on... Lucy
doesn't know what they are.
We'll talk about it a bit later. I'm waiting on my carrier to give us some clear direction as to what they're doing and not hide behind some stupid web-based petition to try and get the thing.
Okay, three. You may as well mention it now.
Three? I didn't say that, did I?
No. Three is the only carrier who has, how would you say, just missed the boat.
Missed the boat.
Mm. Yeah. They've got a petition on their website saying, come on, guys, we want the thing and Apple's overlooked us. Which I find surprising because basically Hutchison's market is the youth of today. There's I guess the young kids at school would be into the three handsets and all the gadgets and all the, you know, the services that come with three. Yet they've been sort of overlooked here and they've gone to the Telstras, which is an Australian dominant company. You've also got the Optuses and the Vodafones, which are larger international companies, which are also carrying it. But poor old Hutchison's.
They've been left behind, haven't they?
But they're big. Mm. They're in Hong Kong. They're in, I don't know, other countries.
And three's parent in Hong Kong has agreed with Apple to sell the iPhone there.
Yeah.
Strange. Who do you use, Lucy? What your carrier, do you know?
Telstra.
Mm-hmm. Graham's with...
I'm Telstra.
You're with everybody.
I've got several. I just choose the best at the time. Whichever network's working correctly.
Whatever the time of the day is.
Yeah, I've got a Vodafone SIM. I've got an Optus SIM.
Whichever way.
No, I don't have an Optus SIM. I've got a Vodafone SIM, 3, and Telstra at the moment.
Mm, Vodafone shares go down a bit. You put the Vodafone SIM in, try and buff up the... Yeah.
I like confusing Dr. Ron. I ring him on a new SIM every now and again. He goes, who's this?
Who's this number? Hi, Dr. Ron. Oh, it's you again.
Do I have to store this one in my memory?
Yeah, you're good.
Anyway, so the iPhone is definitely coming to Telstra on the same day. So that's the end of all those rumours. Now, Adam sent me an email, which I glossed over just briefly before coming in. Dr. Ron, have you had a chance to have a squiz?
It's Adam's email.
Or do we need to digest it during the break?
No. I have had a squeeze. It was essentially to say make sure that we mention that after their Telstra's announcement last week, make sure we mention that there's no reference to data allowance. So Telstra have said that they're going to be selling the iPhone 3G and it's going to be available this model and that model, which are the different capacities, the 8GB and 16GB model. And they're going to have plans starting at $100 a month and it's going to include free Wi-Fi and it's going to be on a 2-year contract, yada, yada, yada. However, there's no mention of data allowance. Adam's been on their case, hassling them. He says, I've been asking for answers, I haven't got any, I don't expect to get any. That would be in the press release if they were going to announce that information. Seems like an obvious piece of the jigsaw that they've left out.
Yeah, it's particularly one of the big features of the new 3G iPhone is its ability to synchronise to Exchange, even though, much to my disappointment, it doesn't support tasks. It only supports the email and the calendar.
Oh, well.
But, if that's one of the main features of it, then you're going to need a data plan on your phone service to be able to connect through the internet to your Exchange service.
Well, you're really going to need
your email and your calendar,
You'll need to know that information to make an informed assessment as to whether or not it's going to be value for money or not. Mm.
Exactly right, yeah.
Feedback at techtalkradio.com.au if you have something to say about that. Now, one of the things that disappointed me, which I've made fairly public in the last few weeks, is the fact that there's no MMSing, which is an important feature for me, the ability to send a JPEG or a movie from the iPhone. It has a camera in it.
The iPhone doesn't support that at all.
The iPhone doesn't have it.
Question, because you're supposed to use email.
No.
Is it what Apple are wanting you to do?
Presumably.
I think Apple are wanting development and third-party applications to someone to write it and put it onto their phones. But anyway, Lucy, question for you. MMS, sending pictures to and from your friends, you know, you're having a party, you take a snap and you send it to someone. Is that important?
Not really. Well, they've got Bluetooth. That's the thing that everybody uses.
Yeah, so what, you're in the same room and you like exchange. So you don't use a telephone network to send it to your friend and look what I'm doing when you're... No.
Mine doesn't use it anyway, but that's because mine's a Samsung. But other people, they just use Bluetooth and they'll just sit there.
And that's because Bluetooth is free, whereas it costs money over...
Basically.
That's what I love about students, don't they? They're really conscious of the bottom line.
They're afraid of their fathers, that's the thing.
Exactly.
Especially when it's just down the hallway. There's intimidation going on here in the studio tonight. So, but that's interesting. Bluetooth. We'll all Bluetooth from one side of the room to the other.
Yeah.
So watch out, Dr. Ron. You'll get hijacked over there if you've got your Bluetooth
Blue-jacked.
Yeah, Blue-jacked. That's
turn
the
it
word.
Off.
Okay. Yeah, good. In other news today, this week, who's that? ICANN. iCandy? I keep thinking of that. ICANN, the name.
iCandy?
I don't know. I just had it in my mind.
Yeah.
Something for the promo. Yes, ICANN, which is the organisation which controls the internet name thingy that everyone has, .com, .net, have come forward and opened, I would say, Pandora's box.
I said opened the floodgates, I think.
Yes, good choice, yes. Mm. It now means that you can have a domain name if your pockets are going to be deep enough and, for your organisation, which is just your organisation's name, a la .apple.
So what they're talking about is what's called the top-level domains, the .coms, the .edus, the .nets. The very end bit of the domain name. So
.org?
You won't have to have .com, .au or even .com at the end of your domain name anymore.
Yes, that's right.
You'll be able to register a .graham top-level domain.
Yes.
Or
I'll just go out and do that.
Yeah.
No. It's not priced for individuals, let me tell you.
Oh.
The rumor has it starting price for these domain names is around about $7,000, and that's the annual fee.
Oh, right. Geez.
Which means...
No, I don't have a spare $7,000.
No, but
for
the point, what they're trying to do is stop people from cyber squatting.
Oh, okay.
Right? Mm. And it also means that you're now going to stop all the large organizations having to worry about rolling out their domain names globally, like, you know, .hk, .edu, .au.co.uk.
So a global organisation like, say, IBM will have .ibm.
That's right.
Hmm.
That's right. And it means that you can be, I guess, www.ibm, or you just type in IBM into your browser. Ooh, that's scary. I know you guys like the W. Oh, you alias guys, you like having your W's in
now,
front of it.
Now, what was the old dial-up system that used to have keywords? Was that CompuServe or one of those? It used to have keywords that, it's going to be back to the old days of that, isn't it? You type in IBM as a keyword just straight into your browser.
I know what you're saying. Yeah.
Mm.
So is it going to work or is it just going to be very confusing for everybody?
Well, both.
Absolutely. I agree with you. I'm just posing the question. Lucy, do you use the web much?
A little bit. Not that much.
But you're year 12.
Yeah.
End of. You should be researching on it or you just get distracted with it and go...
Downloading your essays.
That's my problem.
Absolutely, yes.
No.
Go to iTunes and spend more of Dad's hard-earned cash to give Nikki's
exactly.
credit card numbers, right?
Exactly.
Generation Y, they're good like that. Dear. So, so the internet's not that important?
Not really.
What about social networking?
That's the only thing that I'll use it for, or school email. That's it. That's the only reason that I'd use the internet.
How important
really.
Is social networking to HSC? Yeah?
Huge.
So do you sit there and type away in your assignment and then, you know, one of your pals will pop up and instant messaging, what are you doing?
Then
you get distracted and you're off.
No, I used to be like that, but this year I've set myself the task of, you know, exiting from MSN and not putting anything up on the internet while I'm doing work and then like reward myself.
Is it hard? That'd
later.
Be discipline,
it
I would have thought.
It is very hard, but I've learnt.
I have to do that on
now.
A Monday night after the show to get the podcast on. I have to turn off MSN.
You've got to focus for a bit. And then you've got the reward at the end of, you know.
So do you get nagged by your fellow students saying, why weren't you on?
Yes. Yes, I do.
They move down the food chain to the SMS? She'll be listening on SMS. Quick.
No,
and then,
not really. I turn my phone off too. people don't because people do text me as well. I'll be like, just no.
And then they resort to the home phone.
Just keep
Hi,
going.
Dad, can I speak to her? No, she's doing her assignment.
Oh, it's just the line of communication just follows on.
So social networking, very important.
Yes.
Has any of your group sort of worked on social networking from mobile devices yet?
I have a few friends with hip tops, So that's got like free internet, free MSN, like free everything basically, except free calls, which is interesting.
But you guys don't talk. You
exactly.
Just
so that's another reason why it kind of pushes the fact that, you know, I don't
How
know.
How do you have a relationship if you don't talk? You're limited to 128 characters and
you
smileys.
You just keep texting. Yeah, it's really sad. But yeah, it's just the new free internet and the hip tops and everything. People now just spend their time, instead of just sitting on a train looking out the window, they'll go on MSN or something.
What's a hip top?
Hip top's the, I don't know.
Come on, get with it, Graham.
Which server it is, but they've got, it's like one of those slide tops. It's a bit like a BlackBerry.
Oh, okay.
But you've got free internet, free MSN. It's basically
free. Is it
free
kind of like what
texting.
Dr. Rum's got here with a
yeah,
little phone?
Similar
with
to
a,
that.
Yeah.
Yep. And it's, yeah, they're
like
becoming
the
really popular.
And those things,
really
yeah.
popular. Yep.
Interesting. Yep.
All right, so we're learning a little bit. It's good. I'm glad you came in tonight, Lizzie. We're learning.
You're learning off me. This is the first time ever.
I've got, no. See, I've got young daughters coming through the ranks. I need to know these things.
You need to learn beforehand.
Absolutely. Fair Daddy, enough. Who's going to have the keys to the server, yeah. and I'll know exactly what's going
exactly.
on. Anyway, anyway, just another bit of interesting tech news this week. The EU wants to cut the cost of mobile calls. Funny about that, because it's all pretty cheap these days. When you think of the data plans and our mobile phones that we're using right now, basically transmit data. The same thing that connects to the internet. We just like changes it and goes out our telephone. So why on earth do we pay so much for our telephone calls? The amount that telecommunications operators charge for connecting each other's mobile phone calls is set to fall drastically thanks to the guidelines just published by the European Commission. Probably won't apply here in Australia, you know what sort of renegades we've got here. But the EU Telecoms Commissioner, Mr. Redding, has been threatening to do something about this for some time to iron out inconsistencies across the EU. It should cut the cost of calling other mobile phone networks, which Mr. Redding said was popular with consumers once again. We don't pay in Australia for inbound calls to our mobile phones, but we're very lucky in that respect.
We also don't pay to receive text messages to our phones.
Oh, now that'd put a dent in generation-wide social networking, wouldn't it?
We're also very lucky in that regard.
Do they do that in some
absolutely
other countries?
Absolutely they do.
Ooh.
Oh, absolutely. You pay 20 cents to send a message and you might pay 15 cents to receive a message.
That'd be paramount to sort of like a budgetary thing. You know, we're going to tax everybody. You know, you're going to lose your income tax or something. But no, they're taxing SMSs. Boy, that'd be a revenue
raiser,
wouldn't it?
Imagine if you signed up to a subscription service for a news headlines or something and the service went rogue and hit you with 100 messages in one day because something really busy was happening somewhere that you'd subscribe to, and you'd be up for a fortune just for receiving all this stuff.
Well, like banks do their intercharges and interconnects when you transfer from one bank to another, they get their kick. Telephone companies do the same thing too with their interconnect when you ring one telephone company from another. And I think that's pretty much what they're targeting. The Reserve Bank targeted that when it came to credit cards and the likes. Their bank fees, and the EU are now going to have a go at doing the same thing for telephone calls in Europe and things like that. Because we had a look at roaming. Well, roaming last week is a big issue too when you're in another country. Why should you pay 10 times what you would if you were just locally? And considering from Australia you can ring basically the United States for the same price as I would ring Lucy sitting in the studio here. What's the difference between that and then in the US?
But anyway.
I stand to be corrected by anyone. We haven't done our mail this evening before we go to our first break, Dr. Ron. I was just thinking about that.
We've had
lots of correspondence.
We've had truckloads. Truckloads of correspondence.
Hopefully it's not buried on the desk like mine.
No. Now, we're listening on the email tonight, of course, feedback@techtalkradio.com.au. We're also Twittering, and I'm watching the replies tab tonight. I've got it all worked out now. I know how you can see replies from people or messages from people that you're not following. So bear with me. I'm a little bit slow when it comes to some of these things.
I've lost my password. I'll be with you shortly on Twitter.
Do you use Twitter, Lucy?
I've never heard of Twitter.
Never heard
before.
Of Twitter?
No.
Okay. RK5075. It is the end of Twitter, yep, as we know it. Yeah, so I'm watching the replies tab tonight. So send me a message. I'll show you in the break. Okay. Let's see how it works. I'll get you on board. Lots of follow-ups. Heaps of follow-ups. Bruce. Hi, Bruce. He says, an item of feedback on CPU design. We're talking about processors.
Oh, yes.
A couple of shows back. Ron said something like the CPU chips are all designed by computers now. I think that was Graham or me or one of us. Well, sort of, says Bruce. In any complex design, be it at a transistor level, chip level, or even software, it all comes down to reusable building blocks. That's very true. Initially, the building block was the transistor, and these are shown on each circuit. When NAND gate chips came in, no one drew all the six or so transistors in a NAND gate every time. You just plonk down a NAND gate symbol. Well, it's the same thing with a complicated CPU, except you're now plonking down a whole ALU or RAM cache bank, says Bruce, or pipeline block or something. No one cares exactly how many transistors there are inside the blocks at the time that the sub-design is used, and no one draws a big circuit showing all the transistors. Well, that's probably a pretty good point, isn't it?
You need a lot of paper. Absolutely. Hey, just an email just in. Obviously, Brian's listening to us in the UK at the moment. Read the reduction of mobile phone charges in Europe. One thing that wasn't mentioned in the article linked in our newsletter, that's the Tech Talk Radio newsletter, managed to go out today. Did you notice?
No, I didn't get it.
It's good. I didn't get the email. So, what do you mean you didn't get it?
I didn't get it. Did you send it? I'm serious. I was going to ask you about that.
And like, you guys reckon I've got a bad spam filter. You go and check your emails because everybody else got
it. Dad got it.
Lucy's dad got one.
Did you get one, Greg?
Excellent.
I don't know. I haven't checked my email.
It's too all at the moment.
Anyway, one thing that was mentioned in the article in our newsletter was that Mrs. Redding has said that she wouldn't object to operators charging for incoming calls.
Ooh. Wouldn't object to operators
charging. So they may not get charged incoming calls in the EU at the moment, but potentially that could be on the cards.
Okay, if they reduce the interconnect rates.
Since the auction of the 3G licences in the UK, which went for a fantastic amount, the operators' tariffs and money-grabbing scheme seems to have increased in order for them to recoup some of their investment. Sounds like here, really, doesn't it? Tariff periods are longer and poorer value for money. What's going on? Isn't telecommunications supposed to be getting faster, cheaper, and better?
Supposed to be.
Anyway, more correspondence, Dr. Ron?
Indeed. Tech Junkie in Forest Lake says, quick bit of info. Most GPS systems...
Oh, yes, we talked about GPSs and trams and things the other day, didn't we?
We did, in Oz, are based on the Where Is system. But the N95, the Nokia 95, and the new HTC devices use Route 66/Navtec systems. Nokia bought Navtec some time back.
So this is talking about the underlying map data. So I was saying that most of the devices I was aware of use the same maps, and that's the Where Is that he's referring to.
Yeah.
But he's saying there are a couple that use a different underlying map data.
Like the Nokias that use that one that Nokia has purchased.
Yeah.
Interesting. Aaron says, hi guys, thanks for the great netcast. It's nice to get some Australian content. You're welcome, Aaron. I've been listening to you about 6 months on my Sansa E250. Last week you were mentioning there was social websites. So I recently started to use a web browser known as Flock.
Lids talked about this in the course of time.
http://flock.com. To quote them directly, when using Flock, people can easily discover, access, create and share videos, photos, blogs, feeds and comments across social communities. Lids been using Flock?
I think so. I think it was Lid. I could be wrong. Lucy, have you used Flock? Have you heard of it?
No.
See, social networking, Generation Y. See, I thought we were out of it at times, but I don't think we are quite as out of it as we
are. We're into it a little bit too far. We've gone the opposite end of the scale. Andy sent us a fantastic email. I'm not going to read it all because it's quite complex and it's quite Melbourne-centric, but we're going to post it on the forum.
Oh, this is the two-pager.
Yeah. Andy says, hi, guys. I'm catching up on podcasts ATM.
At the moment.
Well done, Lucy.
There was a visual gag in the studio then, ladies and gentlemen.
He's got 350-plus podcasts to catch up on. He's been off work. He's considering declaring podcast bankruptcy. I'm going to do that too. It's like having email bankruptcy. Do you know what email bankruptcy is, Lucy? Yeah, Lucy's up with email bankruptcy. He listened to a recent show where Andrew mentioned the City Circle trams in Melbourne use GPS to handle the playing of automatic announcements.
Was I right or wrong?
Andy's a tram driver. He wants to say that the City Circle trams don't use GPS.
I was wrong.
The automatic announcements work via the tramway radio network, whereby a large number of antenna are across the city, which sit attached to power poles and the like. These antennas are probably about 10 to 15 centimetres tall. The system is called AVM, Automatic Vehicle Monitoring, and it's used by the control room to locate the position of trams quite accurately. In the case of City Circle...
The trams radiate?
Yeah. The system set up so when a tram makes contact with the antenna... It goes something like this. Hi, I'm a tram. Hi, I'm the antenna at Birken Spring. Okay, thanks. I'll play that MP3 file. Ding, ding. The system was upgraded several years ago. So it says ding, ding. The system was upgraded several years ago due to the unreliability of the older one. He says there is still a GPS one, Andrew, but it's only used on one tram route.
What about the trains? We have trains that know where they are these days.
Train drivers listening to us, feedback at techtalkradio.com.au. We need
absolutely
to know. Thanks, Andy. We'll post the email in its entirety on the forum. It's a great email, very informative. We've got some good links there as well to photographs of the tram control room.
Oh, good. Let's have a read of it. Hey, TiVo's coming very shortly. next week, apparently. Do you know what a TiVo? Do you know what a TiVo is, Susie?
Born.
Oh, good. I'm glad she's in. She is a Luddite, isn't she?
I have no idea about anything.
We have a TiVo update coming up very shortly. Adam Turner, our writer from extraordinaire from the Melbourne Age, Green Guide, and the Sydney Morning Herald, is going to tell us all about TiVos and its pending arrival in Australia next week.
You're listening.
TikTok. Any questions? You're all speechless over this.
I know. You're listening.
You've got the world's most aggressive spam filter.
TikTok.
You're listening.
If you've got the wrong SIM card, it's because they sold you the wrong thing.
TikTok Radio. Talk Radio.
We may have digressed.
The network's probably ready for fibre to the node now.
Telstra has lost the ACCC court case.
They download loss because they can't stand watching it on commercial television.
You're listening to TikTok Radio. Listening to TikTok Radio.
And for those of you joining us late and wondering who Lucy is, Adam, pay attention. Why are you starting late, Adam?
Come on, Adam.
Absolutely. Lucy joins us. She's a Generation Y person to tell us all about what we think we know, but we don't really know about technology tonight. And it's been really good tonight.
How technology is used in the real world by real young people.
Yeah, I've learned lots tonight. I've learned the fact that they get away with blue murder in school these days.
Yeah.
They don't tell the truth to their father about their SMS habits.
No.
I've learned what a hip top is.
Yeah, good. See, already it's been fantastic learning about all these sort of things. Lucy, you're going to have to join us on a semi-regular basis.
I'd
you
love
hang around
to.
And do stuff from time to time.
I'm learning a lot. This is good.
Go and get an iPhone. Then come in and show us all
I
about
will.
It. That'd be good.
On Dad's credit card, of course.
Absolutely. We've got the numbers. That's what you shop on iTunes
exactly,
with.
Exactly. So that's totally fine.
So it doesn't do MMS. Doesn't matter. Lucy doesn't use MMS.
It's fine. See? No problems.
So. Well, that's the thing. That really surprises me, actually, how the new people of today don't use MMS.
Because maybe Apple have done their homework. They've said, no, why are we going to spend money on putting that feature in?
Absolutely.
No point. Young people don't use it.
Well, I don't know. My kids use it religiously. They send me texts all the time. They're only young kids. Goodness me.
Yeah, I've got some funny MMSs from your phone at times.
Absolutely.
When they misdial. Either Andrew's drunk in charge of a Sony Ericsson handset, but or either that or one of his young girls has got hold of the telephone.
Well, they do that religiously. Mm. Hey, Lucy, I know you've got to fly. Thank you very much for stopping past.
No problem.
It's been
Thank
fantastic.
Thank you for having me.
And we'll catch up with you shortly. In
Definitely.
The meanwhile, we're going to have a listen to the TiVo View from the Couch. Adam Turner from the Green Guide, who's listening to us on the stream now. Here's the view for this week.
Adam Turner's View from the Couch on Tech Talk Radio.
The 800-pound PVR gorilla that's been silently lurking in the corner is set to launch this week in Sydney. I'll be at the launch of TiVo, but here's what it will take for an Australian TiVo to find a permanent place in my digital lounge room. It looks like TiVo will sell for around $700 Australian without a monthly subscription fee, which is a little pricey but still not too bad compared to the competition. Apart from the basics, such as twin high-def tuners, HDMI, chasing playback and a big hard drive, here's what I'd like to see for the money. Firstly, generous recording margin for error. A PVR without this is useless in Australia because the television networks aren't known for starting and finishing shows on time. If you really want to catch all of a movie or a late night drama, you need to be able to set recordings to start at least 10 minutes early and run at least 30 minutes late. Microsoft's Media Center Edition interface sucks in this department because it's not designed for Australian conditions. This feature also requires intelligent overlap management, especially with the new trend by networks of cutting ads and even credits between shows. Second feature, intelligent storage management. The problem with almost every PVR is that when the hard drive fills up, it just stops recording and you don't realize until you've already missed your favorite show. Like Microsoft's Media Center Edition software, I want my TiVo to automatically delete old recordings according to my set preferences, so there's always room for new shows. I'd like it to email me if there's a problem, but that could be asking too much. Third essential feature, a season's pass. Now, this is a fancy way of saying I want to record every episode of Star Trek, regardless of which channel it's on and when it starts. A feature like this is essential in Australia because the networks love to shuffle their schedules at the last moment and it's easy to miss a show, which has driven many viewers into the arms of BitTorrent. While we're at it, the networks need to pull their collective fingers out and provide a decent EPG. The current so-called 7-day guide is still very hit and miss. Unless it improves, TiVo will suck. Okay, those are my three core demands, and for the sake of family harmony, I've sworn to never again tolerate a PVR that doesn't offer those three features. Here's my non-core demands that would be the icing on the cake. Number four, online remote scheduling. The ability to program my ICE TV-enabled PVR from afar using the website or a desktop widget is fantastic. It saved my bacon more than once, and I'd be reluctant to give it up. Feature number five, channel surfing restrictions whilst time shifting. Now, this is a little technical, but it's important. If you've resumed a movie after a 5-minute pause to make coffee, it's easy to forget that you're time shifting rather than watching live TV. Now, if you then go to change the channel during an ad break, that 10 minutes in the buffer is lost and you're thrown forward to the present with no way of getting that 10 minutes back. My dream PVR would pop up a warning if I tried to change channel whilst time shifting. 6. Ad skipping. Now, a lot of people carry on about ad skipping. I say it's a nice luxury, but it's not essential. I'd forgive its omission in a PVR that got a tick in every other box. It looks like Australian TiVos will have ad skipping disabled, which is annoying, but in itself, not a deal breaker. So that's my list of demands. Let's see if TiVo delivers.
Entertaining, informative, and independent. You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
There you go. TiVo. What do you reckon, Dr. Ron?
TiVo.
My set-top box, I've got Nui, but it's not TiVo. It's working really well. I do like it. And time shift.
Has it got a network port on the back?
Yes. No. It's on the front.
That's good enough. That's good enough. Network port on the front,
and
that'll do.
Essentially, it's USB. It's not tow. So not. I'm like, what Sony's doing.
You can't network it. Not like what Sony's doing.
No. But we'll talk about that very shortly. One of our listeners sent us an email just before in relation to... what's Sony doing? And we'll talk about that very shortly.
I was going to say, is it any wonder, based on what Adam's saying, that people are being embraced by the BitTorrent networks and file sharing illegally? Apple's people can now buy TV programs on Apple's iTunes in Australia for the first time in history.
Really? Since when?
At $2.99 a pop,
which
is about twice what it costs in the United States. You can't get discounts for a series.
And in some cases, the shows are available for free from the network's own websites.
Correct.
Mm.
No wonder people are just, you know, doing the other thing. What's the point?
Okay, so if you can't beat them, put a Cat5 plug on the back of your telly.
Oh.
Hopefully it comes with a web browser so you can just go straight to iTunes and watch it off that. Or stream it.
Yes, yes, hopefully.
Talk about that very shortly.
Talk about that shortly.
Let's talk about Telstra for a minute. One of the wonderful things of Telstra is that they are a fairly sizable organisation and things don't always quite work the way they should do. And especially when you're in the countryside, because a lot of country folk don't have the choice that we have here in the city. And sometimes it can become a little bit frustrating. Now, a colleague of mine, Graham Dingle, joins us on the phone right now, and he's going to tell us a little bit about some of the trials and tribulations of NextG. Graham, can you tell us a bit about what happened during the course of your week?
Oh, can I tell you about it? I struggle through all sorts of issues in my life. I struggle through software issues, and I struggle through client issues, and all sorts of things that we all do. And then I have the connection issue, Telstra. We live in central Victoria, only about 100 k's from one of the world's biggest cities. But over the last 3 or 4 years, we've been through hell and back, really, I suppose, with trying to get online, be online, and remain online.
But are you Robinson Crusoe by any chance, or is this a common story amongst a lot of your fellow residents?
Well, look, I think that our problems are exacerbated by, and I'm going to mention a word now, which I know you're all very, very familiar with, but it's exacerbated by the fact that we're Macintosh people. When I said three letters, I meant Mac.
That shouldn't make any difference at all, though. It's the connectivity between your machine and the network.
Well, that's what we're told, but I can tell you that in a practical sense, in a day-to-day sense, being a Mac user and being connected to the net through Telstra as a Mac user, the fact is that we're discriminated against in ways that minority groups have been discriminated against over countless generations. It's just appalling.
So what happened? You were saying that they disconnected you for what reason? You were changing a modem or something, and then that was it. You're offline for what, looking like a week?
Well, look, the big story is this. First of all, I explain this to the people that I talk to, because I talk to a lot of people in Telstra. Usually, you know, people who are trying to be helpful, they're the people in the various bureaus that you, or the various levels that you get directed to when you have a problem. I know it's not the individual person's fault. I know that the technology is complex, but from the customer's point of view, it's just crazy. This is what happened. I should probably give you just a bit of background. We had we've put a NextG connection on because our previous connection, well, in fact, we're still running it, to be frank, was ISDN. And all the intelligence was that that ISDN was going to be shut down. It was really appropriate that we get something a little more up to date. So we examined NextG. We're told that it would be all terrific and fine. Bought the system, and you know, there were a lot of conversations, obviously, with technical people and with salespeople about this. But the one thing they didn't tell us was, and to be frank, we didn't ask the question directly, so maybe we were complicitous in the whole thing. But the one thing they didn't tell us was that the NextG connection that we have for Macintosh is not networkable, so we can't run a LAN off a NextG connection into our office.
Is that because of what Telstra provide, or is that because of the some network restriction?
Well, no. Apparently, it's because of what Telstra provide. I have I get very good advice here, even though we're in the country. We've got some fairly sophisticated network people who help us, and it was just not possible to network our Macintoshes off the NextG modem that we had. So we contacted Telstra, and they ultimately confessed and said, no, you're absolutely right, you won't be able to network the computer. And you know, I was a bit miffed about that.
But you had this on ISDN, didn't you? You were all networked together?
That's exactly right. Telstra provided us with ISDN. We actually built our network around the connection that they gave us initially. The issue is that they then told us that we would really have to upgrade and get rid of the ISDN, and that NextG was the way to go. We invested in that, signed the contract, and then found, as we tried to run our LAN on it, that it was impossible. So at the moment, we're running... my computer, for instance, has a NextG connection. Very nice when it works, but my partner, who hangs off the LAN, has to continue to run an ISDN connection. So we're running two, in inverted commas, broadband connections, when we really only need one. I complained about this fairly bitterly, and Telstra finally understood. Nothing shrill, you understand, no screaming and yelling, just a little bit of sort of, persistent complaining. And they said, okay, well, at the end of June, we'll fix the problem for you. And they indicated that they would come to the party and make it possible for us to network our NextG connection. Now, the end of June is, I think, today, isn't it? Today, yes. So tomorrow, I'm going to be on the phone to Countrywide, I think in Bendigo, and saying, okay, well, you know, how are we going to fix this problem? Because frankly, I'm getting a bit sick of paying for two, in inverted commas, broadband connections when I really only need one. But the point of my initial complaint, or my initial story, was that I was sitting minding my own business about a week ago, and the telephone rang, and it was a very nice Telstra person from Townsville who phoned to say that he was just, you know, following up on our NextG issues and could he help? And I said, well, you know, end of June, apparently my networking problem is going to be solved. But while you're there, I said, your software seems to do dreadful things to my computer. It just keeps crashing. You know, I get four or five crashes a day. And I run, large graphics programs. I'm in advertising.
Yeah, you do a lot of web stuff like we do and all that sort of stuff.
A lot of web development stuff. And I need my constant connection. To get five crashes in a day is pretty stressful, I can tell you.
And it was their software doing it, was it?
Well, I said to him, look, you know, this keeps happening. And he said, oh, yes, well, you know, Mac people have that problem. There are some issues with the software. And I said, well, it's not really good enough, is it? He agreed and suggested that that perhaps the modem, there might be a problem with the modem. So I naively said, oh, well, if you think so. And he said, look, I could send you a new modem that might fix the problem. So I said, terrific, send me a new modem then. Anyway, we parted amicably and hung up the phone and thought, how nice, Telstra have, you know, been a bit proactive here. They're trying to fix my problem. Anyway, I got up the next morning, came into the office, tried to log on, and I'd been effectively disconnected. I started at 9 o'clock, and I finished at 10:25. I'm a grown man, but I was just about, and I'm not exaggerating here, I was just about in tears, because I had been unilaterally disconnected, no warning, and I went through I went through six departments. I was hung up on once and put back into a queue, and we all know what that's like. And I was told at the end that there was nothing that could be done, that the IMEI number had been cancelled, and that I would have to wait for my new modem to arrive, and that would be with me in approximately 5 days.
Now, your IMEI number, too, for those who aren't familiar with it, is like the electronic serial number of your internet connection, isn't it? It's a unique number which identifies a mobile device.
Yeah. So, you know, here's me in the middle of this really large and desperately late job, and I had been told that effectively that there was 5 days, 5 working days, when I would not be able to continue to do my job. I begged, I pleaded, I didn't cry, I almost did. And in the end, I just walked away and went out into the garden and thought, well, I'll dig holes for a week. Now, as it happens, we have a friend and neighbour who, wait for it, is an extra Telstra person, and he saw my distress and said, look, I can probably fix this for you. And he got on the telephone, and within 10 minutes he had the problem solved. Within 10 minutes he had spoken to somebody in the activation department, and he used the right words. He said that he wanted the IMEI number reinstated, and they said, well, there's a new modem on the way because the old one's faulty. And he said, no, the old one is perfectly fine, just reinstate the IMEI number. They asked him for the IMEI number from the box and from the number on the SIM card. He gave them that information. She went off. The phone was dead for a few minutes. She came back and said, that's all done, sir, thank you very much. And we were back on again.
Just like that?
Just like that. The thing is that 5 departments, and I'm talking about senior people within Telstra, or comparatively senior people in Telstra, said nothing could be done, nothing could be done, nothing could be done. You know, you had a grown man almost crying, and then somebody who knew something about the arcane world that Telstra is, who had a kind of an end-to-end perspective on the whole thing, was actually able to do something. But if it hadn't happened... I think, today I would have received my modem and I would have been able to get back to work. As it happens, I was able to get back to work within about, a day from the initial problem occurring.
So you sort of sound like a victim of politics or a victim of procedure, I guess, within large organisations. Do you reckon that's endemic with a lot of country users who are reliant on our incumbent telco?
I think so. I think that the further you get from Melbourne... I've lived and worked in Melbourne for an awful long time. The choices that you have diminish exponentially as you move away from the centre of Melbourne. We have effectively one carrier here. Well, I can't crack it and slam the phone down and shift the account to another carrier. It's Telstra or it's nothing, effectively. And I know that, as I say, on an individual level... maybe even at a fairly senior level within the organisation. I don't believe that that's used as a lever against people like us. But that's the reality. There's nothing I can do. I just have to take it on the chin and suck it up and just wait for 5 days if they tell me I can't have it back on for 5 days.
All right. Well, just briefly, Dingle, before we conclude, what do you think of NextG in the bush? We're City Slickers in here. We have choice. We have a lot of carriers to choose from. But when you are reliant on a carrier like this out in the bush, does it work for you when it works?
Look, it is fantastic when it works, I tell you. I get line speeds. Well, I sit opposite my partner. We share the same office, and she's, as I said, still unfortunately running and paying for an ISDN connection that we don't really need. And mind you, after having dial-up, ISDN seemed like a superhighway. But NextG, when it runs and operates, is fantastic. It's quick, and I can get big files through in minutes that used to take me 20 minutes or half an hour. I have experienced ADSL and ADSL2, and I know how quick that can be, and it's not like that. But I can live and work out here if I can get a regular and reliable service. And I feel as though I'm sort of connected in a proper, sophisticated way when it works.
And what about your neighbours? What do they use to connect to the internet, or do they sort of, because they're not doing business, or maybe they are, what do they use?
Oh, well, you see, they don't have the problems that I have because they're all PC, you know, politically correct. really, the problems are there and they're endemic, but they're exacerbated by being a Macintosh user. We really are treated as a, and I'm not one of those paranoid people, you understand.
No.
We're treated as a kind of as comparatively unimportant in the scheme of things, which is surprising because most of my contemporaries who and colleagues who run these things are, you know, tastemakers, you know.
Absolutely.
Pay more attention to us.
Dingle, thank you very much for your time this evening. It's been a bit of an insight. I think a lot of city slickers, there's probably a lot of people listening out in the country at the moment going, oh, yeah, I agree or I concur, because you really just don't have that choice that you do get in the city. And hopefully things might, I don't know, as things settle down with NextG, maybe hopefully they'll get a little bit better.
Look, I hope so. I think that, you know, it wouldn't take much to make it work, and it wouldn't take much to allow us to be as productive as we're able to be if we got good connections. So with a bit of luck, they will get their proverbial together and enable us to live and be connected in the way that we deserve to be.
Thanks again, Graham. That was good. Good insight into technology in the rural side of Australia at the moment, hoping that things improve a little bit. Vodafone apparently are going to get some good stuff out there fairly shortly too, if they haven't already, boys. Any thoughts on that?
Glad I'm living in the city. I really am.
Yeah.
I've got choice. We don't have to put up with that sort of service. As Graham was saying, if there's an issue, you don't have anywhere else to go. You can't vote with your feet because there are no other options in a lot of circumstances.
And I think this is what the ACCC is really trying to, you know, drive home to a lot of people. We're going to have choice. We're going to have choice. All right. We'll think about that a little bit more. We'll be back with more after the break.
Compelling.
Every once in a while, a revolutionary product comes along that changes everything.
Judicious.
The question is really whether young people particularly are addicted to being connected to other people all the time.
Historical.
Today is a very important day in Australia's history. This is the day, the 6th of October, 2006, that life in Australia will be changed forever.
Caring.
I know as a parent, I would often say to my children, you've just spoken to this person for 8 hours at school, how can you sit online and chat to them for another 5 hours?
You heard of road rage? What about web rage?
They should be wearing a mask and carrying a gun.
Relations between Telstra and the federal government have been extremely strained almost from the moment Sol Trujillo became chief executive.
Optus had, again, had quite a good quarter, but its 3G service is very low profile at the moment.
And the Queen's got an iPod.
Betty's got one.
Yeah.
I wonder what she listens to. She'll probably listen to us.
An unexpectedly high number of voters swamped the system. Well, what did they expect?
Controversial.
Less attention is paid to the equally interesting question, should journalists blog?
Magical.
And I've got some residual powers.
Ambitious.
High-speed broadband, it's available in most of Asia as well as being in the rest of the world. Let's just make sure that we can get it in Australia this year, not next.
Religion.
Talking of the Roman Catholics, I have been on Vatican Radio.
Comedy.
You put the date on ePray, it goes, and you get a whole service. Just on.
How does it go?
It goes.
Insightful, entertaining, and informative. Tech Talk Radio. More than just technology.
It's a strictly rehearsed and finely polished program.
The panel on Tech Talk Radio.
The microphones went on, no one heard me.
The panel's a bit miffed as to the Mac networking issue. As I think you summed it up beautifully there, Dr. Graham.
It's just entirely the wrong approach. What Telstra have done is they've provided something like a USB modem plugs into his Mac. He has to run software on his Mac to connect to the next G network, and that software doesn't support providing another connection through, like, say, internet connection sharing does on Windows.
Yep.
But the solution isn't that at all. The solution is to do it in hardware so that the Mac only thinks it's connecting to a normal network. So there's nothing special running on the Mac at all. And that way you can connect a Mac or a PC or a Linux machine or a coffee maker or whatever happens to have a network port on it.
A TiVo.
Or a TiVo. It doesn't matter if you do your networking solution in hardware. So what they need is a hardware device that has a SIM card in it, talks to the next G network, and has an Ethernet port that connects out to other third-party networking devices, like a little router or a little switch or something like that.
This problem, of course, isn't isolated to the Mac. I mean, on the PC, if you have that connected directly to a BigPond cable, you need to run authentication software and stupid BigPond software on the actual PC.
That's right, which makes your PC unstable and slows down the PC. Yep. You have to run internet connection sharing in Windows, isn't anything like perfect. But if you do the solution in hardware, then your PCs just think, I'm just talking to a network, and it's straightforward. So the solution is, don't rely on Telstra for the whole end-to-end. Find someone who understands networks, who can understand the Telstra connection side of it and also your internal network side of it, and get it straightened out with some hardware. And I'm sure it can be done.
Solutions to everything. We'd also like to extend an invite to Telstra, representative thereof, to certainly come in and have a chat with us about some of the issues that have been raised this evening.
Absolutely.
More than welcome to anyone from that organisation. We have extended invitations before, so we'll see what happens this time. Mm. All right, some other interesting things that have been happening in the world this week too, which I guess interesting. Bluetooth and Wi-Fi are going to go their separate ways.
They're already separate, aren't they?
Yeah, well, they are, but Lucy was sort of alluding to the fact that Bluetooth plays a major role in the Gen Y method of sharing data between mobile devices that don't use the mobile network. They tend to end up using, turn your Bluetooth on and I'll text you a song, I'll text you word, I'll Bluetooth you.
Yes, exactly.
The global market for Bluetooth and Wi-Fi continue to show strong growth and will remain the leading personal area networking technologies, but analysts believe that the prices and market developments are pushing them in new directions. Bluetooth and Wi-Fi equipment and chipset numbers continue to increase, according to a short-range wireless communications forecast. So everyone's obviously exactly what Lucy was talking about tonight. They want this short-range, be able to Bluetooth in and out. Even Dr. Ron in the news tonight said cars with Bluetooth built into them.
Chrysler.
Fantastic idea.
Going to build Wi-Fi hotspots well in your car.
It's going to add a whole new world, a whole new meaning to the word backseat driver very shortly.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
You'll be able to plug the steering wheel into the back and whoever's in the back will be able to drive the car for you. But that's my point, isn't it? Bluetooth is all around us. A lot of people, have you ever sat in a restaurant in a busy sort of cosmopolitan environment and turned your Bluetooth on and seen what you can see?
I have.
That's exciting, isn't it?
That's very exciting.
And what you do with it after that is really up to you, isn't it? It's interesting, isn't it? Because also when we were speaking to Microsoft recently, their plans for future proofing sort of things is all, their direction, their location devices are all built around small, little, low-range, or not far-ranging, but short-ranging networks for positioning and things like that. We don't have that in Australia. We have big, vast tracts of land with Next G and with other mobile devices on it. And that's probably about the best we're going to do once you get beyond the city areas. So, Bluetooth and Wi-Fi?
Intended to do different jobs. Bluetooth is personal area networking, whereas Wi-Fi is local area networking.
Let you plug into the internet and in the kitchen, so, like Dr. Ron does.
Yeah, Wi-Fi is supposed to connect between your device and somebody else's device, whereas Bluetooth is supposed to connect between all your own little devices. So, and of course, but there's fuzzy bits of the definition around the edge, like the thing of sending pictures to each other over Bluetooth, because that's a local area function.
Yeah. All right, other interesting news. Turkish hackers are having a bit of a crack at ICANN. We spoke about ICANN earlier on in the show tonight, which is the people that are assigning internet numbers and all
international...
Paul Twomey runs that. He's an Australian, Aussie bloke.
Oh, yeah?
Out of Sydney, I believe. So he'd be an interesting chat, wouldn't he?
What, ICANN Central? International
Internet Assigned Numbers for the Authority.
Assigned Names and Numbers.
No, that's
yeah.
ICANN. What's the other one? Internet Corporation for Assigned Names and Numbers.
Assigned Names
there
and Numbers.
There you go. Anyway, a Turkish hacking group called NetDevils, Devils with a Z on the end of it. Devils. Have successfully hacked the website for ICANN. And the other, and their sister organisation, Internet Assigned Number Authority.
How embarrassment!
The two organisations are key to the running of the internet, and hacking attack is highly embarrassing.
Thank
as
you.
It would be.
Thank you very much.
Especially when you go to the top blokes, they've probably just done it just to spite people. Visitors to the page were redirected to an @space.com.com domain hosting with a message from the hackers. That'd be very funny, really. Log into ICANN to check out what's going on with these new domains, and you get hacked, and it goes off, and you have some form of hijacking software put on your machine.
So I wonder if ICANN forgot to do their Windows updates on their server 2008.
I wonder if the hackers set up their own top-level domain while they were there. dot hackers with a Z, and then started started propagating all these changes through DNS servers around the world.
That's got to be embarrassing, though, really.
Yes.
That'd be like having McAfee's or, you know, Kaspersky's or someone like that being hacked.
You have been hacked on their website. Whoops.
Oh, my goodness me. Anyway, and then you've got all the good old social networking sites. Well, I love getting into those sort of things too. But anyway, hackers, they're great, huh? Speaking of security, some of the tech giants are teaming up together on security. They're obviously deciding that times are a bit tough, and we should all join together and try and keep these people out, especially for ICANN's sake.
Yep.
Five of the biggest names in technology have teamed up, and
which five?
They're known as the Industry Consortium for Advanced Security on the Internet, ICASI. We've got to have an acronym for everything. The world is full of TLAs, three-letter acronyms, and the group will examine ways in which multiple companies can respond to a single security threat. Founding members of the non-profit group include Cisco, in answer to your question, Graham, Intel, IBM, and Juniper Networks. Heard of any of those?
Yes, heard of all of those.
Most of them. Were there five, did you say?
Yes. They've listed four here. The aim of the project is to deal with security threats that may affect multiple companies.
I went to a security breach. The fifth one has fallen off the
I'm just wondering if the fifth one is the CIA.
Oh, maybe.
Yeah.
Maybe they can't be named here in the press release.
Yes, that's right. Can't show you his name on the radio.
The press release has been redacted.
So hopefully that'll be new and bigger, things to come when those guys team up, especially for the large scale. Because that's our biggest threat these days, isn't it? In case someone decides to take down the internet. Where would you be without it? Like, we can all live without phones these days. We can all live without our mums, as they say in that advertising campaign. But could you live without the internet?
Yeah, it's overrated.
A bit of a struggle.
You'd have to go out and do what Graham Dingle did, go and dig holes in the garden and cry.
Yeah, well, that'd probably be what it'd come to.
A lot of people standing outside digging holes in their garden crying in the rain.
But you've got to think, I wonder what sort of infrastructure is also in our day-to-day, urban civilization that we take for granted, which is all connected via the internet, virtual private networks over the internet, TCP/IP. Like, imagine traffic lights, tollways, all those sorts of things. You know, surely they've got to all be connected somehow. Are they done on the internet or on...
They're all connected. They're all connected with traditional... circuit switched and packet switched networks that are owned privately. I don't think the internet figures in any of those.
So they've got their own dedicated cable that runs down the street to
sure
cities
they
and
do.
Towns around the countryside, you think?
I'm almost certain they do.
People will be able to tell us out there listening to us right now.
A lot of those sorts of systems like traffic lights use the telephone network, but they don't use the telephone network as you and I know it. They don't have modems necessarily that dial up and make phone calls.
Work on radio signals.
Yeah, and they have phone lines which are permanently held up. They're permanently switched in. So they're always there, different sorts of phone circuits to what we're accustomed to using. But they probably do use the telephone network.
And they're probably increasingly using internet-like protocols. So they might be using IP, but on a private network, not on the public internet.
Yeah, that would make sense.
Yeah. But it wouldn't surprise me if more and more of those things are going over the public internet just to save on infrastructure costs. But
well, then there's a state of keeping costs down, you would think.
That's right, yeah.
So you've got a redundancy somehow. Because they can sync traffic lights beautifully to make you stop at every single light as you go through
town. How do they do that?
I don't know. You're a man on the moon, but they can't sync a traffic light.
And they know when it's me driving down the road. They only do it to me.
So they are doing it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep.
It's not syncing it in your favour.
That's right. They're syncing it deliberately in my...
Here comes Dr. Graham with his GPS. We'll get him.
Yes.
Discriminating against you, not for you.
That's right.
Do no evil Google sued for $1 billion over intellectual property theft.
Did they do evil?
Well, allegedly they say they don't, but obviously someone's got their nose out of joint. In fact, a Chicago startup business has filed a $1 billion lawsuit against Google. Limit None accuses the search giant of stealing its migration tool technology. It's a well-known corporate philosophy that Google does no evil. And apparently the Chicago-based development software has filed this lawsuit for misappropriating the technology it was working on with them. Obviously, they didn't sign their non-disclosure agreements very well.
Or if they signed it, they didn't read it.
Yeah, they took the ball and ran. There's probably some fine print down the bottom there. So, yes, there you go. Google's maybe up to no good, or maybe they are.
But $1 billion, that's, what, 8 minutes of advertising revenue for them?
Not much for Google, is it?
No, I don't care about $1 billion.
No. Well, you know, good old philanthropy man, Mr. Bill Gates, he left today. He's going off to do more charitable work. He's going to head up Apple, I think.
Yeah. What was he worth? $15 billion or $50 billion or something?
Something like that. But he's decided to pull the pin full time. Come on, Bill. When were you in the office last? You got to ask. But look, we joke. He's done a lot for computing, and I think his philanthropy with his wife is also a really good gesture that he does too. So I hope to be in a situation there where you can get out there and help other people in the world. Do good like that. I think that's a wonderful thing.
Mm. He's certainly done a lot more good outside the software industry than he may have done inside it too.
I think it's which fence you're which side of the fence you're on, those sort of things. As we heard from Graham before, very much a Mac person.
Mm.
And but still, they're all it's all good.
Oh, Microsoft has done very well for their shareholders. You have to say that for him.
Oh yes. Like everybody, all these IT companies are facing lots of change in the coming sort of next few years. They're all getting their clouds together. We're all removing technology from our clients and putting it on servers and accessing it remotely. So, things are going to change, like ICANN. They've started the change. They're probably the ball rolling type organization. That's going to be exciting, though.
Did you use Bill's disk operating system?
DOS.
Hmm.
Yeah.
DOS 3.1.1.
Yes, I used various DOSes, some of which were Bill's and some of which weren't.
3.1.1. You're thinking Windows for Workgroups.
Yeah, but that was all built on DOS. But there was the DOS 5, wasn't it, before that?
And before that. And before that.
TRS 80 stuff. Commodore 64.
No, the first one I used was MS-DOS 3.3.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Good. Yep. Was there one before
your
that?
Memory.
Yeah, there were. There were at least 3.3 ones before that.
Were there ones before that that we used? I'm trying to rack my brains.
So. Well, they were used.
But that we actually were active in supporting or having
no, when I first had anything to do with DOS, it was DOS 3-ish.
I think 4.01 came out.
We did our word processing in WordPerfect 5.1 in text mode.
That's
before
right.
Before we had Windows, yeah.
And DOS 4.01 came out, we all rolled back to 3.3. So this is a disaster blaster.
That's right. And then DOS 5 came out and things were better again.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
Yay.
Nothing
then,
changes.
Then 6 came out and we said, this Windows is a disaster blaster.
Just on the horizon.
Yeah, let's go back to 5. And, yes. Happy days.
Yeah, well, we're still working command line in a lot of OSs. Even in today's Vista, you can bring up the command prompt.
Well,
which is what DOS was all
line
about.
Back. Have you used Exchange, the new Exchange, Exchange 2008? They're putting the command line making a big. There's things you can do in the command line that you can't do in the GUI for that.
There's lots of things you can do in command lines that you can't do for GUIs. Have you ever tried formatting a drive to FAT32 on a XP box or something? You must do it from the command line.
Why would you want to format a FAT32 drive?
Funny you should ask me that.
Figure out how to do the converter FAT32 to an NTFS the other day.
Have you? Oh, that's easy. Going that way is easy.
Hey, hang on. Nerd alert. What? FAT32? What's FAT? You're talking about
file allocation
tables. You're being sizist.
We are, yes. It was sort of like the file partitioning system or the formatting of a drive before we all got swanky with Max version and CDFSs and all those sort of things. But there's a common sort of formatting between drives. If you want to take a portable drive and make it work on your Mac and make it work on your PC and make it work in your set-top box and all those sort of things, it's got to be the old. It's like getting stuck behind the VW on the freeway. You've got to use the old version. And then it talks to everything.
Mm. But there's limitations with a FAT32. You can't have a bigger than a 4 gig file.
Oh, now we're getting personal. Yes, there is. That's right. That's very true. But at the end of the day, that's fine because when you're recording large files like that, the VOB files, they split all by themselves.
They might for you. They didn't for my backup. That was what I was having trouble with.
Didn't they? Oh, okay. Well, more about that off-air, I think. We were talking about Google before. In a service to people who build websites, which is what Google indexes on a daily basis, Google are actually going to have an online forum very shortly.
Oh, yes.
Where webmasters can log in, and it's they call it a web... What do they call it? I'm trying to think of the word now.
A webcast?
Yeah, webcast. That's the word.
Okay.
Where instead of going along to a seminar and sitting in an auditorium and hearing people speak, you can actually log on to Google's webcast, and you'll see people standing up in front of you on your own screen, drinking your own coffee in your own living room or your, you know, wherever you might happen to be, and learn all about building websites the Google way or the Google-friendly way. The date for this is the July the 8th. So as we go to air tonight, that's about 8 days away in the new year, the new financial year, 9 a.m. in the morning, Pacific time, which, what's that? That's probably...
Oh, that's very complicated.
That's pretty early in the morning for us on the east coast of Australia. But nonetheless, if you're keen and enthusiastic and want to learn all about the new stuff that's happening...
Is that the code jam thing?
Sort of.
Or is that something altogether different?
Now you're confusing me.
No, you're talking about the webmaster, web design stuff, aren't
you? Yeah, if you want to learn about webmaster tools, analytics, optimization, all that sort of stuff, this is where the free seminar will be, so you can come along and...
So what time was it, Pacific time?
9 o'clock in the morning, Californian time.
0900 Pacific time is 0200 Melbourne and Sydney time.
Okay, so... Drink lots of coffee the night before.
Yeah, and it's a different day, yeah. So, yeah, it's 2 o'clock in the morning the following day. It's always yesterday in America.
It is. We're in front of them.
The snippet
in more ways than one.
The snippet news that Lid sent through was in relation to Google Code Jam.
Oh, yes.
Do you enjoy solving tough problems and grappling with technical challenges?
I do that on a daily basis, but it's not technically.
We're over it now. Then enter Google Code Jam if the answer is yes. Google Code Jam is a coding competition in which professional and student programmers are asked to solve complex algorithmic challenges in a limited amount of time. The contest is all-inclusive. Google Code Jam lets you program in the coding language and development environment of your choice. Google Code Jam begins in July and continues in August, where you will compete in online rounds against contestants from around the world. The top 500 participants will advance to on-site competitions at the local Google office to compete against those in their region. There's an Asia-Pacific region. There's a European region, a Middle East, Africa, and Americas region. The top 100 will participate in the final round at the Google headquarters in Mountain View, California on Friday, November 14.
And what does the ultimate winner get?
Doesn't say.
Job with Google.
Maybe get a job with Google. They'd probably... That wouldn't
They're
be
big
a bad,
like that. Google will...
Yeah, that wouldn't be a bad prize either.
No.
That's how they...
be paid
That
to
wouldn't
go
be
work.
Bad for Google.
No, it wouldn't be bad for Google. You're going to have the best of the best.
Yeah.
Make sure you register between June 17, which was a while ago, and July 17, which isn't too far away. Show your coding creativity in Google Code Jam. If you want more information, go to code.google.com/codejam.
We had Developers Day recently. I unfortunately didn't manage to get there this year, but they like exhibiting all those sort of good applications that they, you know, Google like to see people develop. Mm-hmm. So, worthwhile sort of things to get involved with. Just previously, we were referring to the five organisations that were part of the We'll Band Together and,
make the place more secure.
That's them. A listener whose email address is very familiar to me. Hello, Simon. Cisco, IBM, Intel, Juniper Networks, and Microsoft. Don't know how they got omitted off the thing. That was from Simon K. I'm sure you boys know that man.
Oh, I remember Simon.
Yeah, there you go. Simon. So there you go.
See, Bill's not going to work anymore, and this is the sort of detail, attention to detail he used to provide. The company's going to go downhill fast now he's not there. This is the unravelling. Someone's pulling the thread and everything's unravelling.
The beginning of the end. We'll be back with more in a moment, I guess.
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
Have you heard something on Tech Talk Radio worth talking about? Are you looking to share your technical dilemmas or opinions with like-minded Tech Talk Radio listeners? Well, now you can. Introducing the Tech Talk Radio web forum. Visit forum.techtalkradio.com.au and join our community. It's free and on a web browser near you. The panel on Tech Talk Radio.
Not wanting to be left out of the Apple sort of genre, Telstra set up its new T-Life shop in Melbourne recently. Big sort of interactive, following the footsteps of Apple's big Apple store Life in Sydney.
Yes.
Why do you say that?
Yes. Do they have people queuing up from the other side of the world, three blocks down the street waiting to get in when the doors open?
Sadly, no.
No.
Okay.
No.
The Melbourne store located on the corner of Bourke and Swanston joins other Tea Life stores in Sydney, Geelong, Chadstone and Doncaster. Big in Melbourne, apparently. There you
go. Yes, yes.
So, I'm not sure what you'd be able to get in there, but I reckon it'll be the usual stuff. Bit of Foxtel, bit of broadband, Big Pond, bit of all that sort of stuff.
In some
a bit
mobile
of a
phones.
User-friendly life, yeah.
Yeah.
Hopefully they've got some staff there that have some form of knowing what they're talking about.
Some uniformed employees.
That'd be good.
Like at the Apple store.
Yes, yes. Why do they got cash registers like they don't have at the Apple store? I've never been to one. Have you been one?
No.
It's only Sydney, isn't it?
No, it's only,
we should get
only Sydney. We should. Yeah. Should have done that road trip.
We should have.
Where's Justin?
He's in Sydney.
Is he?
Yeah.
At the Apple store?
I don't know. Probably he'd be heading towards it, actually. I think he's in Canberra as we speak. Hi, JD, if you're listening to us.
If he went as far up as Canberra, he wouldn't be able to help himself. He'd do that extra few hours, wouldn't
Absolutely.
He? Up the highway.
Too right he would.
Yeah.
Firefox hits 19 million downloads.
And climbing.
And climbing. The first week availability of Mozilla's Firefox 3 browser has yielded 19 million downloads. Now, you wouldn't want to be their ISP, would you? If you're on PowerWeb, you'd be dead in the water.
Scurrilous accusation, but...
Well, unfortunately, if the...
cruel but fair.
If it sticks... Yes. Unfortunately, it does. But there you go. I've had no complaints with my Firefox. It's working exceptionally well.
Good.
Doing some. I'm getting used to its new idiosyncrasies. It's doing some lovely stuff too. So,
I've got a bit of a bugbear with the new Firefox.
Do tell.
Yeah, with Ubuntu.
Does it matter?
It needs dependencies. Does it matter? It needs dependencies which aren't shipped with it.
Oh, really?
There's no automatic installer. You have to download it and unpack it and
build it. Oh, so you need extra bits, do you?
You need extra, and then you do that, and you need extra bits. There's a lot of discussion about this at the moment.
Don't Ubuntu package it all for you?
No.
They will. I bet they will. I bet they just haven't
yet. Not yet is my answer, perhaps.
Yeah. So there'll be an Ubuntu Firefox package that will just do it for you if you're a bit more patient.
I'm hoping. I'm hoping soon. Hoping that'll happen soon. But it's a bit of a nightmare at the moment, and I had a bit of a crack at it.
There's a lot of people that'll be very impatient.
Yeah.
Impatient, unpatient. What's the correct grammar
there?
Yes,
impatient. I wasted an hour and a half of my life and thought, no, I'll hang on.
You've been on holidays. What are you talking about?
Yeah, my time is valuable.
Oh, goodness.
I'm not back at work yet, you know.
Well.
That's right.
Dear. Now, just briefly before we go to the website, Gadget and Odd Spot of the Week.
Is that time already?
I know. Time flies when you're having
fun.
Hurry
up, Russell Sprout.
Let me... we've been talking about Twitter, social networking sites.
Oh,
I finally
yes.
remembered my password, resubscribed and got back online again. So,
good work. Good work. You're on at the moment.
It's only taken me most of the show to actually get there. But what were you just saying? You're using yours with your mobile now.
Yep.
So...
Yep. People who are following
serious,
me
there. You need therapy and counselling, Dr. Ron.
I started
not even
using
Generation
this.
Y do this.
I know. I started doing this and then I threw it all away. And then the mighty cyber goddess Eyelid got me switched on back into it.
She's going on holidays for a while. Did you know she's off to Cancun? Last time she went to Cancun, there was a big wind came through afterwards and blew the whole town down.
Really?
I wonder if that'll happen again this time.
Just like in The Wizard of Oz.
That's right.
Yeah.
Cancun, for those of you who are not familiar, is the holiday destination in Mexico. It's where Californians tend to go for a bit of a break.
Ah.
Like Bali for us.
Well, she's got me...
Malta for the Poms.
Yes, that's right.
Sorry, go on, I interrupted.
She's got
you hooked?
Got me hooked again. Yeah, so I've been...
So what happens on your mobile? You get SMSs hourly, minutely,
Well, I
secondly.
Can get SMSs on my mobile phone at absolutely no charge whatsoever, which is great.
What, Twitter texts you?
Twitter texts me if someone posts a status change that I'm following.
Oh, you've got to be kidding.
Yeah.
Who pays for all this?
Well, Twitter does. It's limited to 250 messages.
So what do you do?
A week.
Oh, okay. Well, that's all right.
That's pretty good, I reckon.
250 messages a week. That's going to make you seem very popular if you're in the office at any particular point
in
time.
Yeah, Dr. Ron's mobile phone, beep, beep. It's always going beep, beep, and it's just junk. No, the thing I was saying to Graham is that there are services like CNN and the BBC, NASA. They all have Twitter accounts, and they post little news headlines and snippets of information during the course of the day. So if you subscribe to them and get them switched through to your mobile phone as text messages, you can have free news update services.
That's great.
Coming through to your mobile at absolutely no charge to you. It's really
great.
You're just limited to your 250 messages. But be aware, if you're on one of these carriers like we were talking about earlier in the program, that charges you to receive messages, you'll be paying for these messages on your mobile phone account.
So watch out in EU land if it goes that way, or in the US.
Just be careful. But it is going well. You can also select which people you want to receive your mobile updates for. So if you're following 10 people, but you only want to get SMSs when 3 people post status changes, you can nominate which ones.
TARDIS3 just sent me a message. He's because I've just logged in again and remembered how to do it.
Did you click on the replies tab?
I did.
That had me stuffed for days.
I'm sitting there. I'm looking at TARDIS3. It says, cool. Man of many words.
Well, it's not like you can say instead of 140 characters. You have to be rather concise.
Where's TARDIS? He's in Queensland, if I remember, isn't
he? I'm not sure he'll tell you in a minute. Give
he
him
will.
30 seconds.
Okay,
he'll
I'll refresh the page and send us where you are.
That's
it.
Thank you very much to Warlock for all your testing and assistance over the course of the last week or so. It started to become a bit of a bugbear. I didn't understand how it worked, and I wanted to understand how it worked.
So this the SMSing thing?
Yeah, and also updates and replies and how you get messages and was causing me some angst. But
so you're an expert. You're a guru now. And
oh, look, it's one of these things. You touch it once and then you become the guru. I don't know if I'm a guru or not. Not yet, I don't think. But I'm starting to have a better understanding of how it works.
Are you enjoying it or are you starting to lose interest in
it? No, I'm enjoying it. I'm enjoying it. Facebook doesn't have SMS messaging to us down under.
Doesn't it?
No, it supports messaging, I think, in the United States.
They haven't done a deal with a carrier or something.
No, they haven't done any deals down here. So, well, they haven't done a deal with a carrier. Twitter hasn't done a deal with any carriers in Australia. They're just using a service out of the UK. But fortunately...
So how do you set your mobile up to do this? Do you just log on to their website and it happens?
Log on and it asks you to send a message to a number in the UK, which only costs it's just 20 cents.
Hey, your phone's gone off now. What's that?
Oh, yeah, it's always going off. Oh, look, Twitter. Look, see?
Yeah, good for
I'll
radio, Dr. Ryan.
Yeah, I'll take a photo with it later. So, yeah, TARDIS 3. That's right. It's coming through with my update. So,
oh, so TARDIS 3 is talking to you too?
Yeah.
Oh, my goodness.
Well, he's probably sent an update.
So what's your RK5075?
Correct.
I'm TTR 2008. What are you, Dr. Graham?
I'm GC248, but I don't ever use the thing, so...
Okay, so forget about that one.
I'm logged in at the moment, though. I've just changed my status to failing to update my Twitter status.
Yes, but if... If a message comes through to me from Twitter, it comes from that +44 number, and I've just added that into a memory in my phone with the name Twitter. So it just lights up on my phone as a message from Twitter.
Oh, yeah. That's a good idea.
Yes.
I think it's wonderful. It's good. And if it doesn't cost you anything, well, why not?
Why not? Why not indeed?
Make you seem very popular amongst all your peers and friends and work colleagues.
There were some anxious moments then when I keyed my mobile phone number into it. I thought, what am I doing here? Am I selling my soul to the devil? What is going to happen? But I did a lot of research first. I searched for the words Twitter spam... complaints, problem, help.
Oh, yeah, okay.
And hardly no hits at all.
You're also one who doesn't like putting your personal details in online.
Yeah, I know. That's why I was a bit concerned. But
you've overcome that phobia, have you?
Well, the lack of discussion online about anyone having any problems with Twitter sort of gave me a level of...
of confidence.
Yeah.
Well, that's good.
Very good.
Excellent. All right, you're listening to Tech Talk Radio. We're in the final stages of the show this evening. We had, during the course of a day, an email from James Gardner, a listener of the program, pointing out the fact that Sony are about to start shipping television sets very shortly.
Hi, James.
9 out of 10 television sets are going to start having a little, Cat5 plug in the back, a bit of a local area network thing happening. Don't quite know the ins and outs of it very shortly, but when an organisation such as Sony decides to put I wonder if it's got a web browser and all that sort of stuff in it, in the telly.
I hope so.
Because this is where it's going, isn't it? You don't want to be using your set-top boxes, your TiVos, your PVRs or anything like that. You just want to sit there with your remote control on the telly and go, oh, wonder what ABC Playback's got on tonight. And you can jump on ABC Playback and go and look at any one of the million television programs that are online straight to your television set, across your internet.
It makes a lot of sense. It makes a lot of sense to have an Ethernet connection in your television and for it to be networked, and also have it as an open standard, to have a web browser in there and be able just to connect in with your browser of choice or your software of choice. I don't want it to be a Sony network port.
You're a bit skeptical about open
source. I'm very skeptical. And the reason I'm skeptical, Andrew, is... look, A-Track, Sonic Stage.
But haven't they learned from
that? No, they haven't learned. They haven't learned because they continue to do this sort of stuff. And until I see an open standards Ethernet port in the back of a TV, I'm going to remain skeptical. Graham, what are your thoughts?
I'm not sure why you want an Ethernet port. I'd rather have an Ethernet port in my set-top box.
Everyone wants an Ethernet port in their telly. Adam wants one in his toaster, for goodness sakes.
Yeah. Yeah, no.
What Graham's saying is right.
In the Ethernet port in the set-top box will allow me to use a web browser on my computer to set up all the program times and things I want to record. I thought that video recorders should have had this for years.
Yeah. That's what Adam wants in his TiVo.
It's so hard to program your video recorder, using the remote control on the, you got to press this button 8 times to do one function and 7 times to do a different function.
Yep.
Whereas if you had it on a web browser, and you could just pull, you know, to have a pull down list and select from the choices, it would be so much easier. Seems and like that's where it's much going to be much more useful.
It seems like such an obvious thing to do. And the technology.
Quite apart from setting clocks.
Oh, yes.
We've run out of time, boys.
You're listening.
Dr. Ron?
Here I am listening.
Residual powers. And I've got some residual powers.
You can't turn off CDMA.
In terms of the volume,
over a second, give fingerprints. Now,
we may have digressed.
Talk radio. Talk radio.
Bill Burgess also claimed the country would remain behind.
We used to think 600 kilometers.
Don't open hands with those good that you're not expecting, even if they do a thing like that.
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
In this house, we obey the laws of thermodynamics.
Tech Talk Radio's Gadget of the Week.
The Topia 150-kilogram single-seat electric car is this week's gadget. This clearly minuscule road warrior, which officially tips the scales at 150 kilograms, or just over 330 pounds, holds one lucky motorist and a small briefcase. That's all. It's a prototype electric car called the Huvo, H-U-V-O. Its frame is constructed from high tensile steel plate. The doors and the back panel are constructed from aluminium alloy, or aluminum alloy if you live in the United States. The roof from carbon fiber reinforced plastic. The windshield from polycarbonate. And the interior wheels covers from ABS resin. Your guess is as good as ours when it comes to crash test ratings. Yes, this review is from Engadget.com, but have a look if you're interested in smart cars and saving the planet and your planet needs you and energy-efficient things. I wouldn't want to come up against a semi, though, on a dark night.
Absolutely.
150-kilogram...
What happened to the phone? I like your phone.
No, that's a bit visual.
Okay.
Yeah, that's something altogether different. That's this week's gadget, the Topia 150-kilogram single-seat electric car.
Here it is, everybody! The world's greatest website.
Tech Talk Radio website of the week.
www.wikispaces.com. Wikispaces lets you create simple web pages that groups, friends, and families can edit together. So if you're in a family, in a classroom, sports team.
It's got to get easier, doesn't it?
A book club? Yeah. A fan club. If you're a wedding planner. And set up your own wiki space and off you go.
So what does that mean? It's just like a just do-it-yourself web kit type
yeah,
thing?
Yeah, do-it-yourself web construction site.
Wiki's free,
which
isn't
you
it?
Can, yeah, it is. Which you can give permission to other people to access and to update. It's got an inbuilt WordPress blog, and the public wikis are free. Private and ad-free wiki options range from $5 per month to $20 per month. So they make their money on advertising there. It's secure because you set... who's allowed to actually view and edit your wiki, which is quite good.
Excellent.
Yeah, so have a look. Bit of fun, wikispaces.com.
There is a fine line between genius and madness.
Missed it by that much.
I know nothing. Nothing.
Houston, we have a problem.
The Odd Spot on Tech Talk Radio.
Now, after last week's electric female robots, this one's got nothing to do with such things. Bit different.
I dread
thank
this.
Thank goodness for that.
Absolutely.
You were, like, 5-10 minutes after the show, neither of you had actually said anything last week. You were still speechless.
Yeah, we were.
Did you rush out and buy one?
No.
No. A Canadian court has lifted a 12-year-old girl's grounding, overturning her father's punishment for disobeying his orders to stay off the internet.
Well, watch out, Lucy.
Lucy, the girl had taken her father to Quebec Superior Court after he refused to allow her to go on a school trip for chatting on websites he tried to block. And then posting inappropriate pictures of herself online using a friend's computer. According to court documents, the girl's internet transgression was just the latest in a string of broken house rules. Even so, Justice Suzanne Tessier found her punishment too severe. The father's lawyer said the disciplinary measures were for the girl's own protection, and he's appealing the ruling to re-establish parental authority.
Takes it a bit far, doesn't it?
What would you do if your daughters took you to court to have their grounding overturned?
I don't know. What's
knock,
the
knock,
world?
Knock. There, you. Are you Andrew McColl? Yes, I am. There you are. You've been served. What? What's this? What? I've got to go to court.
Yes,
your daughter's grounded.
Oh, dear.
McColl versus McColl.
Look, you know, it could be worse. Could be worse. could be, yeah. Anyway, we won't go there tonight. You've been listening to Tech Talk Radio, wherever you are around this great, wonderful planet of ours. We've had a lot of interesting emails this evening. Keep them coming. Feedback at techtalkradio.com.au. That's our email address. Or jump on the Twitter site, because we're getting really good at Twitter. And
we're getting good at Twitter. Join the Facebook group, Tech Talk Radio Facebook group.
And even James has suggested a bit of software where we can all join together and have live chats on the web server and things like that. But we'll look into all that sort of stuff.
We will. We will.
All fun and games. Anyway, join us same time next week on the station that you're listening to right now. Or on your iPod, wherever it might happen to be, or in the car, because we've got Bluetooth in our cars these days.
Bluetooth, Wi-Fi, everything.
Sensational. I wonder what's going to happen between now and then. The news and technology world is always an ever-changing thing. It's better and better. All right, till next week. Bye for now.
You've been listening to Tech Talk Radio, brought to you each and every week by a group of dedicated professionals from within the media, broadcasting, IT and telecommunications industries. The team consists of executive producer Andrew McComb, producer Dr. Ron Panlis, Graham Callaghan and Mark Diggins, expert opinion Adam Turner, and our US correspondent is Lydia Davis. Post-production facilities courtesy of Evolving Communications. Podcast production by Graham Callaghan. Tech Talk Radio is broadcast, recorded and streamed live to the world each and every Monday night at 8 p.m. from the studios of 3WBC. The crew wish to thank all the stations that take the show, including 3WBC and 3XX in Melbourne, Cairns FM, Switch 1197 in Brisbane, 95.3 Huon FM in Tasmania, Queer FM in WA, and Stop and Go Radio in the United States. For sponsorship and advertising, call 03 9018 9043 or visit our website, techtalkradio.com.au. This has been a production of Tech Talk Radio Vic and is subject to copyright and applicable laws and may not be rebroadcast without approval.